Chapter 53. Harry sat next to Kingsley at the front center of the room, only half listening to the listing of crimes. He knew more about what crimes had been committed than they did. Kingsley knew a fair amount, but he wasn't admitting any more than necessary. Harry wondered briefly what house he'd been in at Hogwarts. Slytherin seemed like a fair bet, if not Gryffindor. Fudge had surely been a bloody Hufflepuff. Thankfully, he wasn't around any longer. Harry felt a pang of remorse that Scrimgeour wasn't around. The man had grown on him, and he certainly hadn't wanted the man to die. Too many people had died. He couldn't help but look over his left shoulder at all the people there. Kingsley had been right, and there were a great number of people present to support... Well, he wasn't sure if they were there to support Draco and the others on trial, or more to support him in their defense. It was probably more the latter, but that was all right. He was relieved to see all of them. Ron and Hermione, the twins and Ginny. Fred and George were surely there for Draco's sake, as well as Harry's. The other Weasleys were present. Even Percy was in the room, actually, but he was on the other side of the room, along with all the officials. His head was down, though, and he looked like all his spirit had gone out of him as he recorded the proceedings. Harry could only hope that Voldemort's defeat had finally woken Percy up to what he'd been missing. Because if that didn't do it, then certainly nothing would. McGonagall was in attendance, along with many of the Order members. Moody looked as sullen as ever, but when he caught Harry's eye, he winked at him. Harry blinked in astonishment, before offering him a small grin. All of the members of the DA were present. What was shocking was the fact that the neutral Slytherins were dispersed throughout the group. Although, Harry found himself not being too surprised to see Daphne sitting with Lavender and the Patil twins. Blaise was sitting with Ginny. Crabbe and Goyle appeared to be under Blaise's control for the time being, what with Harry and Draco otherwise engaged. They had their issues, but Harry found himself feeling extremely proud of them. It had probably taken more guts for them to stand up and fight on Harry's side than it had for a lot of people. They didn't appear to make any decisions on their own, but they'd made that one. Harry was grateful to see for himself that everyone had made it through the final battle. Kingsley had filled that side of the room with supporters, and not reporters. There was also relief in the fact that they all looked at him like they normally did. He was still Harry to this group of people. The other side of the room was another story. He was reminded of Bagman's trial that he'd witnessed in Dumbledore's pensive. He wouldn't be one bit surprised if he got asked for a bloody autograph in the middle of the trial. Many of the members were gazing at him in awe, some with a hint of fear, but mostly in awe. He was a real live hero, gracing them with his presence. Harry snorted softly. If he didn't start looking at this with a bucket of salt and a sense of humor, he was going to go mad. Feeling a hand on his shoulder, he turned his head to give Remus a rueful smile. Reassured, Remus smiled in return. Tonks started them both a knowing, amused grin. Harry felt sure that if she was free to talk, she'd have some wonderful commentary regarding the fawning behavior of the members of the Wizengamot. They were caught out, however, by one of the older members. "Mr. Potter, do you find such heinous crimes to be a source of amusement?" The little old wizard was staring at Harry with severe disapproval. "No, sir," Harry said contritely. He gestured to his left. "This is simply the first time that I've seen many of my friends since Voldemort was defeated, as I've been in the hospital wing. I'm relieved to actually see that they're all right, and it makes me happy." He inwardly rolled his eyes at the soft sighs and looks of sympathy and understanding he received. This was too bloody easy. Draco would be so proud. "Yes, well, I do see how that would explain the source of your smiles," the wizard said. "This is a serious matter at hand, however, and it should be addressed accordingly." "With all due respect, sir, I do agree that it should be addressed seriously, but I don't understand the point of rehashing the actual crimes," Harry said. "And why not?" Harry shrugged. "This trial isn't about determining guilt, is it? We all know that they've committed crimes. They were Death Eaters. I'd hazard a guess that they're the most well-known for that matter. Therefore, this trial isn't about determining guilt. The question is whether you'll pardon them or not, considering the extenuating circumstances of war. Mr. Potter, you are aware that a pardon is the forgiveness of a crime and the punishment associated with it. Harry shrugged again. Yeah, he said. The "what's your point?" was left off but clearly heard by all. They've committed many crimes, the wizard said insistently. Not all of them conducted from the right side of the war. Surely you do not expect them to be pardoned for all of their past crimes. Yes, I do, Harry said simply, leaving most of the members of the Wizengamot blinking in astonishment. Kingsley cleared his throat. Perhaps we should get straight to Mr. Potter's testimony. He turned the suggestion into a question, directing it to the other members. One question first, the old wizard said. He stared intently at Harry. Mr. Potter, are you stating that the four accused are guilty of all the crimes listed? Yes, Harry admitted. The direct question and answer sent a wild murmur through the audience. Clearly no one had expected that. He knew, though, that they would be more likely to believe everything he told them from that point on. At least, he hoped so. Otherwise, he'd just made a serious mistake. He bit his lip nervously, but even after thinking on it for a minute, he stood by his decision. Everyone already knew Severus killed Dumbledore. It wasn't like it was news to anyone, and that was the biggest crime that was being addressed. What they didn't know was all the things that the four accused had done to redeem themselves. Not that Severus technically needed redeeming as far as Harry was concerned. Severus had always been on the right side, and he would make sure everyone was aware of that fact before he was through. Are you ready, then? Kingsley asked quietly, considering that you just skipped half the trial procedures, he agreed dryly. Harry looked at him sheepishly. Saves time, doesn't it? That it does, Kingsley agreed, shaking his head. He conjured a comfortable chair at the front of the room for Harry. As Harry moved to face everyone, he was thankful he didn't have to sit in that horrible chair with the chains. He couldn't help briefly comparing the dark green armchair with the cozy chintz chairs that Dumbledore had conjured when he'd been a witness for Harry. It did make him feel better to remember that Dumbledore had cleared Severus in the past, covering part of the time when Severus had been a real Death Eater. He remembered the words Dumbledore had spoken when Karkaroff had been naming names. Severus Snape was indeed a Death Eater. However, he rejoined our side before Lord Voldemort's downfall and turned spy for us, at great personal risk. He is now no more a Death Eater than I am. Words Harry had turned over in his mind many times, and had taken too long to finally believe fully. But it was a reminder that changing sides counted for a great deal with the Council, particularly when vouched for by someone respected throughout the community. There was certainly precedent set for what Harry was doing. His eyes swept over the people sitting on the benches before him. The awe was dimmed now. Everyone was watching him intently, waiting for him to tell his story. Taking a deep breath, he began. Harry bowed his head, exhausted. His head was throbbing unmercifully, but he did his best to ignore it. This was too important to let a little pain get in the way. He felt like he'd been talking for hours, and probably had been, he realized. The room was absolutely silent. No rustling robes, no quiet murmuring, no benches scraping over the stone floor. He wanted to laugh, although it wasn't really funny. He told Blaise the week before that he'd probably never hear the full story of what had happened that summer. That was still technically true, as there were a few things that Harry had mentioned only in vague references, the biggest being the Horcruxes. As he told Kingsley he would, he also fudged a little on how Lucius had escaped from Azkaban. He told the truth, otherwise, while conveniently leaving a few things out. More than a summer's worth of personalized truth, beginning with the prophecy, although not how it had originally come to Voldemort's attention. He explained as much as he possibly could. Never in his life had he felt so exposed. By revealing his own weaknesses, he'd been able to highlight the strengths of the others. Draco, Severus, Narcissa, and Lucius were revealed as the people Harry had come to know that summer. Human with their own strengths and weaknesses that helped carry them through to victory. Kingsley had conjured a small table beside his chair long before, and Harry poured himself some more water from the jug that rested on its surface. His throat was dry, and his voice was hoarse after talking for so long. His movements broke the absolute silence of the room. Sipping the water, he looked back up as Kingsley cleared his throat.
"Are there any questions for Mr. Potter?"
Several people looked like they might have had questions, but only the little old wizard from earlier dared to voice them. Harry tensed as the man began speaking, but it wasn't any of the questions he feared.
"You have made it clear that they have renounced their ways while under your influence this summer. What makes you believe that they will not return to unlawful activities if they are pardoned?"
"Are you suggesting that I've been their keepers this summer?" Harry asked in disbelief.
"Mr. Potter," the wizard said slowly. He paused, appearing to choose his words carefully. "I am suggesting it has been your close proximity which has been beneficial to their behavior these past couple months. In other words, you're afraid of pardoning them unless I agree to watch over them like children." Harry said flatly. "You wish to make me responsible for them."
"Are you unwilling to be held responsible for them?" he asked quickly.
"What kind of question is that?" Harry asked rhetorically. "If I say yes, you take it to mean I think they need someone watching over them. If I say no, you take it to mean that I'm not willing to stand behind their actions."
The wizard continued to stare at him expectantly. Harry clenched his jaw. "If the members of the Wizengamot are incapable of doing the right thing by pardoning these people, who should be lauded as heroes for all they've done for the magical community, then yes, I am completely willing to be held responsible for their actions." The wizard sat back with a look of contemplation.
"If I might make a suggestion," McGonagall spoke up, as she stood to address the courtroom.
Kingsley nodded his permission, his expression suspiciously blank. Harry's eyes darted between the two of them warily.
"Perhaps a year of community service, in which they might prove themselves in the public eye," McGonagall suggested. "While they are indeed heroes, much of their activity has been conducted under cover out of necessity."
"What did you have in mind?" the wizard asked suspiciously.
"As you all know, Hogwarts has been officially declared open for the next school year," McGonagall said briskly.
Harry blinked. It was news to him. Good news, though he wasn't sure where McGonagall was going with this.
"I am in need of potions, defense, and transfigurations professors,"
McGonagall said. "I propose that Narcissa Malfoy, Lucius Malfoy, and Severus Snape serve 1 year at the school. Draco Malfoy should return to the school to attend classes. He will require his newts if we wish him to be a contributing member of society. As his community service, I propose that he be responsible for brewing the necessary potions for the hospital wing for the entire year." Harry gaped at her, along with almost everyone else in the room. Admittedly, for different reasons. As far as he was concerned, it would put Severus back at the school where he wanted to be. Draco's punishment was the one Severus had already given to him, and Harry anyway. Narcissa would be at the school, and it would keep the family, including Victoria, close together during Harry and Draco's final year of school. And it would serve Lucius right to have to teach. It couldn't be more perfect. And there was actually precedent already set for her suggestion. Dumbledore had brought Severus to the school years before after a trial not unlike this one.
"You cannot be serious."
McGonagall looked down her nose at the speaker with her sternest expression.
"I assure you, I am completely serious."
"Harry Potter will be attending his final year of school," she said. "This will put them within close proximity, for his influence to be beneficial." Harry's eyes widened to hear the wizard's earlier words tossed back at him.
They would be conducting their service within the public eye, where their deeds could be observed. As for their qualifications, I believe that if they are capable of teaching our dear Mr. Potter, they will be capable of teaching our other pupils with skill."
"But the Malfoys have no teaching experience."
"I do have an advisor in mind that would be able to assist them with lesson plans and such," McGonagall said briskly.
Harry attempted to suppress his sudden grin. The crafty old woman had just secured a place for Remus at the school as well. He was sure of it. "We cannot, in good conscience, place them within Hogwarts. Parents will not allow their children to attend where known Death Eaters are present."
"For one," Harry interrupted, "they are no more Death Eater than I am," he said, unconsciously using the words Dumbledore had used so long ago. "Two, they are intelligent, competent instructors, as I've learned through experience. Three, whether the parents like it or not, they are heroes of this war. Four, do you really think Professor McGonagall would deliberately risk her students' lives?" He shook his head.
"You're all nutters if you think Professor McGonagall would put up with any nonsense as headmistress," he said fervently. His comment brought forth several reluctant smiles, as well as several disapproving frowns. Kingsley looked like he was attempting to suppress a smile. Quiet sniggering could be heard from the left side of the room. Harry smiled sheepishly, apologetically, at the members of the council. It probably wasn't his smartest idea to call them mental. He was amazed to receive so many indulgent smiles in return. Merlin? He could get away with murder with this crowd. He quickly ducked his head under the pretense of pouring more water. He swallowed heavily. He was getting away with murder.
"Perhaps we should bring in the accused now," Kingsley suggested.
The members of the council nodded in agreement. Harry resumed his seat next to Kingsley as Tonks went to retrieve them. He sat tensely, trying not to think too much. With the way his head hurt, it hurt to think. There was a quiet muttering in the room now, but he couldn't pick out any of the words. He watched with vague interest as Kingsley conjured three chairs to match the one Harry had been sitting in for so long. It was a statement that they were not being treated as dangerous criminals. Harry smiled faintly as Draco, Severus, Narcissa, and Lucius were led into the room. Faces impassive, they took their seats calmly with heads held high. Draco caught his eye and Harry felt instantly better. Draco had confidence in him, even when he didn't have confidence in himself. Harry risked a glance to his right, checking the reactions of the council members. Some looked afraid, but most were examining the accused with open curiosity, most likely attempting to reconcile their images of hardened Death Eaters with the images Harry had brought out. Kingsley cleared his throat, capturing everyone's undivided attention.
"Mr. Potter has spoken on your behalf," he said, his deep voice resonating throughout the room. "At this time, the council is considering pardoning each of you for your past crimes in recognition of all that you have done for the benefit of the light side during time of war. Many are uncomfortable, however, with granting a full pardon, considering the nature of your past behavior, and believe a condition of 1 year community service would be appropriate."
Draco glanced sharply at Harry as the others stiffened. Harry smiled weakly. He wasn't happy with being their keepers either, but it would at least get them all back to Hogwarts.
"Do you have any objections or wish to say anything in your defense?" Kingsley asked.
"We accept the terms of the council," Lucius said smoothly, the other three nodding once in agreement.
"Very well, then,"
Kingsley said. He faced the members of the Wizengamot, restating the terms and conditions that McGonagall had suggested earlier. Harry watched the four at the front of the room closely for their reactions. Severus, Lucius, and Narcissa managed to hide their reactions well. Only a marginal widening of their eyes showed their surprise. Draco's mask slipped completely for a few seconds as he stared at Kingsley in shock. Kingsley put it up for voting.
"All those in favor of the conditional pardon?"
Harry couldn't count fast enough, but the majority of the members raised their hands, most of them staring at Harry as they did so.
"All those opposed?"
A few raised their hands. Harry blinked as he realized they were all deliberately avoiding his gaze. Kingsley announced the verdict, and it was abruptly over. The sudden cheering from the left-hand side of the room overwhelmed Harry in his already stunned state. He winced as the sound reverberated through his skull. Draco materialized in the chair Tonks had sat in earlier, pulling Harry close.
"Harry, you did it!" he exclaimed softly. "Gods, are you all right?"
"I'm fine," Harry said dazedly. He simply couldn't believe it was suddenly all over. Voldemort was gone, his family was free, his friends had survived, and they were all going to be heading back to Hogwarts. Extreme relief was making him feel lightheaded, but combined with the migraine-sized headache he had, he was beginning to feel physically ill. He swallowed heavily. This was not his moment, and he didn't want to get sick and ruin it for the others. He tilted his head up to look at Draco.
"You're free," he murmured.
"Congratulations." Draco nodded absently in acknowledgement.
"Harry, you're not looking very good," he said worriedly.
Severus crouched down beside them. He brushed the back of his hand across Harry's cheek and forehead, as if he were checking for fever.
"Congratulations, Severus," Harry said softly.
Severus's expression softened, his fingers brushing Harry's fringe away from his eyes.
"It is you who deserves congratulations, Harry," he said. "It is due to your efforts that we are free, even conditionally. I never expected to receive my life back, let alone gain so much more than I ever had before. Thank you."
"You're welcome," Harry said.
"Severus, Draco, I'm afraid there is paperwork you must sign," Kingsley said, eyeing Harry in concern.
"Remus, take him home," Severus said, looking over Harry's shoulder.
"I want to stay with Draco," Harry protested. "Then we should be celebrating."
"You will be doing nothing of the sort," Severus said, his tone brooking no argument. "Thanks to you, Draco will be able to go home shortly. You've done your part. Now you are to go home and rest."
Harry sagged in defeat, feeling like he was taking away from their victory. His body was betraying them, though. He couldn't deny that going home and going to bed sounded like a good idea. With the pressure suddenly gone, it was as if his body decided it was finally all right to collapse. Draco hugged him close.
"Harry, we'll celebrate later, all right? When you're feeling better."
"I'm tired of feeling like shite," Harry muttered bitterly. With a finger under Harry's chin, Draco lifted Harry's head up.
"The worst is all over, Harry," he said. "There's no hurry to celebrate. No need to rush for anything."
He pressed a chaste kiss to Harry's lips.
"It's time for healing."
Remus was attempting to usher Harry upstairs, but Harry detoured into the nursery.
"Daddy!"
Victoria had been standing, but she dropped to her hands and knees to crawl to Harry. It was faster than the few wobbling steps she'd been able to manage so far. Harry dropped to the floor himself, ignoring the pounding in his head, sweeping her into his arms. As happy as Victoria was to see him, she didn't put up with Harry hugging her tightly for long. She squirmed in protest until Harry put her down. She stayed in his lap, though. Winky handed Victoria the owl cuddly she was so fond of.
"It is good to have Master Harry home," she said quietly.
"Thank you, Winky," Harry said gratefully. "Victoria and I are both very lucky to have you taking care of us." Winky beamed at him tearfully before bowing and disappearing. Harry stared down at the little girl.
"It's all over, Pumpkin," he said softly. "Your daddy will be home soon."
She grinned up at him and Harry smiled. It was going to be all right.
"She's not been alone with Winky all week," Remus spoke up quietly.
"Where's she been?" Harry asked in surprise.
"She has spent a great deal of time with Molly," Remus said. "I do believe Molly has enjoyed getting to know her granddaughter."
"Oh," Harry said, blinking furiously. "Does Draco know?"
"Yes, although Narcissa was the one to suggest it," Remus said.
Harry knew his mind was a little fuzzy, the pain making it more difficult to think clearly.
but he wasn't sure this would be easy to understand even if he was feeling well. He'd forced himself to concentrate throughout the day, with so much riding on his testimony, but had allowed himself to relax after leaving the ministry. It wasn't easy to make his mind start working again, now that it had shut down. He didn't protest when Remus gently lifted Victoria from his lap. "Harry, you should go lie down," Remus urged. Pushing himself to his feet, Harry nodded weakly. Perhaps he'd be able to sort his mind out after he got some more sleep. Harry woke, feeling refreshed and blessedly normal. No pounding in his head, no aching in his shoulder. He was warm and comfortable, wrapped snugly in Draco's arms, in their own bed. Mostly comfortable, he eased out of bed and slipped into the loo. Walking back into the bedroom, he smiled happily to see Draco awake, lying on his side and propped on his elbow. "You're finally awake," Draco said. Harry crawled back into bed and kissed Draco good morning. "I am," he said. "I feel good, too." "I'll attest to that," Draco said, with a lascivious smirk, gliding his hand down Harry's side to rest on his hip. "What did you mean by finally?" Harry asked curiously. Draco paused, his smirk turning into a half-smile. "You've been asleep all weekend," he revealed. Harry blinked in astonishment. "What day is it?" "It's Monday," Draco answered. "When we got back Friday, Severus had Madame Pomfrey check you over. She put you in a healing sleep. Let's just say she's not impressed with how hard you've pushed yourself over the last month or so." Harry shrugged uncomfortably. "She knew I had things to do," he said. "Yes, which is why she never forced you to rest properly before," Draco agreed. "With all the crises past, though, she had Severus's permission to knock you out until you were fully healed." "Oh," Harry said, not quite sure how to feel about that. "Well, I reckon it worked because I feel better now than I have in a long time." He stretched out on his back, staring blankly up at the blue canopy. "You're still here," he said softly. "Of course I am," Draco drawled. "Where else would I be?" "Dead? Azkaban? Malfoy Manor?" Harry listed the possibilities, his fears. "I was always afraid to think ahead to this point. I'd talk about it, but I've always known I wouldn't really have a future until I destroyed Voldemort. But it's all over now. I mean, surely there'll be repercussions, but it's all over. Voldemort's gone. You're here. I'm here." "You get to live now, Harry," Draco said, tracing a finger along Harry's jaw. "Neither can live while the other survives," Harry quoted. "That's what it means, doesn't it? I'm free to live my life now that he's finally gone." "I think so," Draco agreed. He hesitated, his finger pausing in its tracing of Harry's features. "You do know it's not going to be perfect, don't you?" he asked. Harry turned his head to look at him, hearing the touch of uncertainty in Draco's voice. "What do you mean?" "You've received a lot of fan mail this last week," Draco said. "But we've all received a lot of howlers as well, especially the last 2 days." "Ah, so I've turned into the embodiment of evil even sooner than I expected," Harry said dryly. "I tried telling you I would." "You've received a couple like that," Draco admitted. "You are not bothered by them?" "A little, maybe. But I'm rather used to it," Harry said. "I'm periodically shunned for one reason or another." "Most of the wizarding world is rather pleased with you at the moment," Draco said dryly. "Yeah, so it doesn't matter what a few of them have to say," Harry said. "To be honest, I don't really care much what any of them have to say anymore. I'd much rather they all forget about me and just leave me alone." "That's not going to happen, Harry," Draco said. "I know," Harry said, "but it's a nice thought anyway." Draco didn't comment, staring at the sheets. Harry frowned at him. "What are you not telling me?" "Most of the howlers are for the rest of us," Draco said. He paused. "Most of them are for me, actually. Since the trial, everyone knows we're together, and they're warning me to stay away from you. You're too good to be with Death Eater scum like me.
You're not believing them, are you? Harry asked.
No,
Draco answered. Harry simply stared at him. Maybe a little, Draco admitted irritably.
Merlin, Harry, you could have absolutely anyone you want. You've done your good deed. I'm free to go about society again and even go back to school. Why the fuck would you want to stay with me now? I'm just going to tarnish your reputation.
Yes, because my reputation is what I care about most in the world, Harry said sarcastically, rolling his eyes. He shoved Draco back, reversing their positions. Propped up on his elbow, he stared down at Draco. He ran his free hand through Draco's hair, across his cheekbone, traced down his cheek. He knew Draco would probably consider it an insult, but Harry loved how Draco was first thing in the morning. His hair was tousled sexily. He was relaxed and not a sign of the airs he tended to put on in public. His expression was open, if rather vulnerable at the moment. Harry appreciated that Draco was willing to be vulnerable in front of him. Showing perceived weakness was not a dominant trait for the Malfoys. Draco was always so strong for him, and Harry forgot sometimes that he needed to be strong for Draco as well.
You, Draco Malfoy, are mine, Harry declared. I can, supposedly, have anyone I want, but I've got lucky because I have you. Sexy, intelligent, charming, pain in the arse, you.
Draco arched a brow, his lips twitching into that half-smile Harry loved.
Pain in the arse?
Harry grinned. You are and you know it, he said. It's one of the things I love about you. I can argue with you to my heart's content and I don't have to tiptoe around you, watching everything I say. You love me for the same reason, he added smugly.
Possibly, Draco said noncommittal. So, why else do you love me?
It was Harry's turn to arch a brow. What the hell had been in those howlers? Harry was generally the one plagued by bouts of insecurity, not Draco. Harry had grown up with the Dursleys belittling him at any chance they got. Draco had grown up loved and secure in who he was. He lost a lot of his self-confidence for a while, but he'd been gaining it back over the course of the summer. Or so Harry had thought.
Well, Harry said thoughtfully, tracing a random pattern over Draco's chest.
You've got a wicked tongue, to be admired for its many uses, both verbal and otherwise. Smirking, Draco took hold of Harry's hand and licked the palm.
Do go on, he drawled, before sucking Harry's middle finger into his mouth.
Harry stared. Draco was only swirling his tongue around his finger, but it felt unexpectedly brilliant.
You're flexible, Harry said absently.
Draco popped Harry's finger out of his mouth, sniggering.
You love me because I'm flexible.
Harry focused on Draco's eyes instead of his mouth, and realized what he said.
I didn't mean it like that, he retorted. Although, come to think of it, you're pretty flexible physically as well.
What did you mean then? Draco asked. He obviously wanted to hear the answer, because he stopped teasing and laced their fingers together, resting their hands on his chest.
Harry shrugged. You've had to be flexible to put up with all the shite I've put us through this summer, he said. I know I'm not the easiest person to live with, and I've got a lot of fucking issues, but you accept me anyway.
Maybe tough Draco Malfoy actually needed to hear the sappier sentiments after all the howlers. Harry licked his lips nervously.
Draco, I like the idea that you're my personal hero, he said. I'm sure there are people who are calling you a blood traitor and a coward.
He saw Draco's slight flinch, his suspicion confirmed on at least one part of the howlers.
But to me, you're brave and strong, and I have no idea if I would have survived this summer if I hadn't had you to lean on when I needed it.
You're the one who's brave and strong, Draco said flatly.
So are you, Harry insisted. You have to be to put up with me.
Draco smiled reluctantly.
I'm not letting you go just because of some idiots who don't know a thing about either of us, Harry said. So you're just going to have to stop listening to them.
"I should bow down and listen to the wisdom of Harry Potter?" Draco asked, smirking. "When I'm right, yes," Harry declared, grinning. "And when you're wrong?" Draco questioned. "Feel free to argue," Harry said. His grin turned mischievous. "You can still bow down before me, though. I like you on your knees." He let out an undignified squeal as Draco started licking him. Draco was straddling his hips and still tickling him when the door suddenly flew open. Tears of laughter streaming down his cheeks, Harry looked at the newcomers. Severus and Remus had burst into the room, Lucius and Narcissa right behind them. "Harry's awake," Draco announced into the sudden silence.
Good morning," Harry said, trying not to laugh at the four adults who had obviously been geared up for an emergency.
"Good morning indeed," Severus said dryly. "I gather you are feeling well this morning."
"I feel fantastic," Harry admitted.
"I believe I shall go summon Madame Pomfrey," Narcissa said, her light laughter heard as she slipped out of the room.
Shaking his head, Lucius followed her.
"Get dressed and come downstairs," Severus ordered, sweeping from the room.
Smiling broadly, Remus shut the door behind him on his way out. Draco grinned down at Harry.
"I think Severus will let me put the silencing charms back up on our room now," he said.
Madame Pomfrey caught Harry and Draco on their way downstairs and ushered Harry into the drawing room. Harry sat in resignation, allowing her to examine him.
"Any lingering pain?" she questioned.
"No, nothing," Harry admitted. He smoothed his fingers over his forehead, recognizing how literal that was. There was nothing on his forehead now. No scar, no connection.
"Good," she said briskly. She obviously wasn't taking his word for it, though, as she continued to run her scans.
She conducted a thorough examination, finally declaring that he was healthy.
"You have lost a bit of weight," she said. "The nutrient potions are not enough to sustain you, and you need to eat."
"As soon as I'm allowed to go to breakfast, I promise to eat," Harry said, smiling.
She offered him a small smile in return.
"You may go," she said in dismissal.
She followed him downstairs to the kitchen and updated the others on his health before fleeing back to Hogwarts. Harry ate hungrily, but he eyed the people at the table curiously. The adults and Victoria were eating in the kitchen again, as most of the Slytherins were gone. But Blaise, Crabbe, and Goyle were still there. Severus gave him a warning glance, and Harry clamped down on his curiosity, at least as far as they were concerned.
"Are we really going back to Hogwarts?" he asked. "All of us?"
All eyes shifted to Lucius, who grimaced in distaste.
"Professor Malfoy, instructor of potions at your service," he drawled sardonically.
Food forgotten, Harry's eyebrows rose. He'd not had a chance to process that it was true, let alone figure out who would be teaching what. He remembered working on the potions in the Dursleys' kitchen. Narcissa had said that she wasn't as good at potions as Draco or his father. Harry hadn't put much thought into it, though, as Lucius hadn't been around at the time. When Harry remained silent, Lucius continued,
"I am not a potions master like Severus, but I do know the subject well enough to be able to teach it to others," he explained. "Severus will be proving the curse against the defense post has been lifted and teaching those classes again."
"You'll be able to teach more tactics now that you can be open, can't you?" Harry said. Severus nodded in acknowledgement. Harry looked to Narcissa. "So you'll be teaching transfigurations in McGonagall's place?"
"I'm looking forward to the challenge," Narcissa said.
Harry's attention gravitated back to Lucius. "You know this wasn't my idea, right?"
"Yet you are pleased with the results anyway," Lucius said knowingly.
"Well, yeah," Harry admitted, "but not because they're using it as punishment. I promised Draco and Severus we'd get back to Hogwarts, where we belong, one way or another. I thought I'd have to fight the Board of Governors or something. I didn't expect McGonagall to suggest this."
"Why am I not surprised to hear that you planned to fight the Board of Governors?" Severus asked dryly.
"He just fought the Wizengamot Council instead," Blaise pointed out, smirking. Harry shrugged. "Worked, didn't it? Everyone's here eating breakfast instead of sitting in Azkaban. His eyes drifted to Lucius again.
I have no cause for complaint, Lucius admitted. I believe Headmistress McGonagall should be commended for her solution, Narcissa said. It does address many of our concerns for the next year, as well as gives her more time to find other, perhaps more suitable, professors.
So you'll have family quarters or something? Harry asked. Victoria will be able to live with you, right? She'll be close?
Yes, Victoria will stay in our quarters, Narcissa agreed, as will you and Draco.
Harry darted a glance at Draco, who nodded, looking smug.
McGonagall suggested that it would be beneficial if you lived with us to watch over us, he drawled, rolling his eyes.
She is rewarding her golden boy, Severus said dryly.
That too, Draco agreed, still looking extremely smug.
We won't have to stay in the dorms? Harry asked, needing it clarified. We'll still be able to share a room?
Your special treatment is going to work in my favor this year, Draco said.
Harry bit his lip. Maybe I should stay in the dorms, he said reluctantly. What? No! Draco exclaimed. I am not going to sleep apart from you when I don't have to. Last week was hard enough. Harry hadn't thought about the fact that Draco had been forced to sleep alone in the holding cell for 5 nights while he'd been unconscious in the hospital wing at Hogwarts. He didn't want to sleep apart from Draco, but he didn't really want to be seen as getting even more special treatment than he already was.
Harry, yes, it could be construed as special treatment, but it is deserved, Severus said. As well, it does serve the purpose that McGonagall has mentioned. It will ease the minds of the council and many of the parents if you remain within close proximity of the Malfoys. This is an adjustment period for us, Narcissa said. It will take time for us to be accepted into the wizarding community again. This truly is an opportunity, not a punishment, that Headmistress McGonagall has offered the Malfoys.
I, personally, believe that Minerva spent far too many years under Albus's influence, Severus said conversationally. It does sound like something he would have done, doesn't it? Harry agreed, smiling. I would not doubt that Minerva was conspiring with his portrait before the trial last week, Severus said dryly. So we're agreed? Draco asked, bringing the conversation back to the point he was most concerned with. We're not sleeping in the dorms. I'd rather be with you, Harry admitted. I just feel like I'm pushing my luck, getting special treatment again. The other students and some of the professors, he said, giving Severus a pointed look, tend to frown on me getting special treatment. Oh, bloody hell! He exclaimed suddenly as the thought struck him. He dropped his face into his hands, slumping dejectedly. What is it, Harry? Remus voiced their concern. The Gryffindors are going to hate me again, Harry said miserably. I'm bringing Snape back and 2 more evil Slytherin professors. I can just picture all the points we'll be losing. The sniggering was not reassuring. This is why I hate special treatment, Harry said sullenly, lifting his head to glare at them. I never ask for it, and it always gets me into more trouble than it's worth.
Are you saying I'm not worth it? Draco asked, brow raised.
That's not fair, Harry said. Yes, you're worth it, but it doesn't mean I have to like being a pariah in my own house again.
Harry, you're the bloody savior of the wizarding world, Draco said in exasperation. You're not going to be cast out by the Gryffindors.
It's happened for less, Harry pointed out.
I thought you didn't care what anyone else thinks, Draco said, changing tactics.
Harry sighed. I reckon it doesn't really matter, he admitted. At least I won't be living with them this time. It's just that it's going to be drawing more attention to me. I'll be standing out again. I've never had a year where I was just a regular student along with everyone else.
You've really never had it easy, have you? Draco said.
Harry shook his head. For all that things were going his way, it was going to be another difficult year. He eyed Draco. It'll be better for you, he said.
"It'll definitely be better for me this year," Draco muttered. "Even if the entire school is against me, it'll be better." Staring at Draco, Harry felt like a selfish bastard. He wanted to apologize, but Draco glared at him in warning, so he kept his mouth shut. Draco had every reason to be more insecure than normal. It wasn't just their relationship, it was everything. Draco had left Hogwarts under horrid circumstances. It wasn't going to be an easy adjustment to be accepted at the school again. Harry felt horrid for complaining. If it took throwing around his bloody savior status to make things easier for Draco, then that's what he'd do. It didn't much matter in the long run if it brought more unwanted attention to himself. He'd survived it all these years. He could get through another year. But he was beginning to understand the enormity of how much things had changed.